Uh-oh. Dude, what happened? Press it again. Are we on the air? Are we on the air right now? Oh, no. Can y'all hear us?
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama. Together you got smooth. Drama. Smooth. Drama.
And you are here live with Buddy Pecan.
And Dick Hugger.
And today we are going to talk about crackers.
Crackers. Man, this, crackers. You know, everybody knows I've been on racial rehab.
He's coming out of it today.
I can't take no more.
I turned the key and something let him out, because, damn.
No, it, you know, first, you know, last year, we got the Obama elected, and, you know, they had the Curious George t-shirt, you know, the whole monkey reverence, whatnot. Now, you fast forward, and you have when Professor Louis Gates got in trouble, with his little skirmish with the police, whatnot, you had this punk ass policeman, Justin Barrett, out of Boston. Yeah. And he had the nerve to say that if he would have been verbally assaulted by the banana eating jungle monkey, I would have sprayed him in the face with some OC, deserving of his belligerent noncompliance. And, of course, he goes on to say, I'm not a racist, but I'm prejudiced towards people who are stupid and pretend to stand up and preach for something they say is freedom, but it is merely attention.
What was he talking about?
He was talking about Louis Gates, but pretty much he was speaking to everybody who looked like me.
Right.
Basically.
What's this banana-eating?
Banana-eating jungle monkey.
Right.
Yeah. And then we get to Costco.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on the air and just Costco.
Nobody shop at Costco. Man.
Costco. Kiss my ass.
No. Kiss my motherfucking ass.
Oh, my God. Costco selling little monkey dolls.
Yeah, did everybody hear about that?
They had to pull thousands of its Cuddle With Me baby dolls, because I guess some people found that the little plastic dolls with little plastic baby black dolls with little monkey written on the hat was a little offensive.
A little?
Just a little.
Who is the asshole, who is the buyer at Costco that signed off on that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I see you, I'm punching you in the face.
More than punching him in the face. He's an idiot.
You know, and that's no excuse at all.
You probably cost Costco millions of dollars.
Well, the fact that you thought it was a good idea to put
stupid
little black dolls with a little monkey on it as a good idea.
Stupid.
Fuck you. Period.
You suck.
Yes. Nah, you don't even suck. Because that might be turned as good for you. Fuck you.
You
with
suck.
An old camel dick. Yes, I said it.
Mm.
Yeah,
the visual on that just wasn't great.
That's what I'm talking about. Camels are ugly.
Yeah, you said old camel.
Old
not
camel.
Old camel.
Dragon
decrepit
balls. Right. Camels.
Okay.
Yeah. I find it just hard to believe. And then, to top it off,
unprecedented what we got going on. Everybody knows about the healthcare debate, whatnot.
Oh yeah.
Which, you know, at first it was no big deal, even though I did find it kind of appalling that you had people crying and shit, and folks is battling and hollering and screaming over healthcare.
I bet you they have healthcare.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like people who have healthcare are mad at folks who might get it. They tell, oh, you're going to take something away. No, fucker, you have healthcare.
Now you have to realize the ones that do have healthcare are actually helping with the cost for those who don't have healthcare.
Right.
So I don't know what you're bitching about, and you should be happy that you have health care.
Well, I mean, one, the fact that people are mad, and it's not about you. This whole debate is about the roughly 50 million people
that
don't have health care.
And the ones that are showing up and screaming and crying about it are the ones that do have health care.
Right. I mean, I have health care.
I don't have health care.
Right. So we perfect combination right here. So we looking at it like, why would I be mad if she has a chance to get health care? I'm paying taxes that I don't know where the hell it go anyway.
Exactly.
I mean, last time I checked, roughly 60-some bucks comes out of my check for health care. Yeah, about 60, 70 bucks.
Wow.
Now, mind you, and most people who get paid and understand this know that money doesn't go into a savings account for my health care benefit.
It goes somewhere.
It's not coming back to him. Even if I don't use it or not. I mean,
it's not going to the doctors because he's still paying a co-payment.
Right. So I'm saying that, once a month, I'm paying that. So we're looking at 7 times 12. That's about $840, $850
a year
that I'm dropping. That
we don't know where that's going.
Nobody knows where it's going.
Okay.
Nobody talks about that.
So all you people that are driving and bitching, you suck.
Well, no, it's not about you suck. I mean, it's to the point. I mean, we passed sucking now. We way past. I mean, they have the guys who are following Obama around with the assault rifles.
Mm.
Now, they keep talking about the shit is legal, but I would have never. I mean, you remember the big fuss when the dude threw his shoes at Bush?
Yeah.
You know.
That was a bad aim.
Right. Now, if I would have had a gun just standing around where Bush is, I wouldn't even have been able to have the gun there.
Right.
They would have arrested my black ass and beat me like they did Homie that they pulled out the truck in Minnesota.
Right.
You know.
But, if you know.
But
I
these
know.
Dudes
I know.
Who are of Caucasian.
Crackers.
Yeah, persuasion. They get to have rifles around the president.
Can you believe that?
Am I missing something?
No, you're not missing
am
something.
Am I missing something? Maybe I'm tripping.
No, you don't.
Maybe I'm tripping.
Are we twisting?
I don't know. Because, I mean, this is what we got. And in these states that he's in, whatnot, there are no laws on the books, conveniently, and that's why they can show up with these guns.
And they say it's legal. There's nothing stating that they can't do it, so they actually say it's legal.
Right.
Stupid.
Exactly.
That, you know, that's like me when I'm driving and I need to make a U-turn, and my kid's asking, can you make a U-turn? It doesn't say I can't.
Right.
And it's sad in this world today, in the world that we live in, we have to have everything in writing, black and white, so that we understand it. But yet, when our kids do something wrong, because we haven't given them clear enough directions, we get pissed off at them. Yeah, I do it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not right in front of them in writing. I mean, our kids can use that. Well, it doesn't say anywhere that I can't do it.
Yeah, but still, what
adults are using that excuse,
right, but,
to do the shit that they do now.
Right, but what we're saying is this. I mean, presidents have been shot. I mean, one, we already are at a dangerous little part, a place and time, you know, because you got the black president, you got people who are of non-black persuasion,
right,
who are of the opinion that, oh, the world is coming to an end, so they've all bought up all these guns, whatnot,
right,
and, you know, now they just walking around with the guns, whatnot. I mean, now, you imagine, under this racially charged atmosphere, what would happen if somebody even took a shot at Barack? You know, it could get scary here real quick.
Yeah, it could.
You know, because the nation would divide itself up real quick.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, people don't have common sense. You know, it's something one of my old supervisors at work had. Don't bring crazy here. We're all stocked up already.
Exactly, we are.
You know, we stocked up on crazy, and these folks is adding to the craziness
mm-hmm.
over a non-issue for most of them. And, you know, people are talking like health care is going to take your health, like, it's going to switch.
Right.
Like, all of you who have health care are going to get yours taken away, and we're going to give them to Popo.
Right. We're not taking, you're not having anything taken away from you. It's just trying to help the people that don't have it. Well, on that note, we need to announce, we do have a special guest this evening, is Spider, MC Spider D. And for those of you that don't remember who he is, he did, what's it called?
Smurfy's Dance, baby.
Smurfy's Dance, old school, for those of you who don't remember. I didn't remember until I actually heard the song.
Well, a lot of people don't know songs.
But I want to play. I want to play a part of it so that.
I want to play a part of it.
You know, most of you will remember once you hear it.
Get your groove on a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Did I spell that right?
Yeah. No. Ph. Yeah, Smurfy Dance.
I-E-S.
Yeah.
So that way, you know, you guys will hopefully remember who this is. And Colin, he's going to be here on the show talking with us in a little bit. So hopefully y'all remember this song. Can you hear it?
Thank you.
y'all can sit down now. Well, once you, you know, be into the show, talk to Spider D, call in, email us, chat with us, blog, whatever. So Spider D, we're about ready to call you. Call me. Hopefully I don't. Am I calling the right person? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Call somebody. Call my road dog, Gary. Pretty good. Road dog, call in.
Hello.
Hello.
What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on?
Not too much. Ooh. What's going on with you?
Sound like you're sleeping.
No, just kicking back, watching some videos.
What kind of video?
Oh, we can't answer that.
That's all right.
No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry.
No, I'm just
That's cool.
watching some regular videos.
You know, after 10 o'clock is old.
It is?
Oh.
Anybody call you after 10 o'clock is old? See, I'm
thinking throughout the day, man. Well, I know.
So you're on the air with Butter Pecan and you know Dick Cugger here.
We're on the air.
We're on the air.
Are we on the air?
We are on the air. I think we're on the air. But that's okay. Cool. It's cool. You can say whatever you want.
You got a hip-hop legend in the building, Spider B. What's going on with you, man?
Oh, not much. You guys are on the air live, like, what, every Tuesday, is that?
Tuesday and Thursday night.
Thursday night.
All right. Well, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I've heard a lot about your show.
Uh-oh.
No, all good things.
I've heard a lot about the show, too.
All right, man. So, you know, I think... Like a lot of our listeners, they may know your songs, whatnot. Tell some of the people some of the stuff that you've done.
Well, you know, I started back in the early days of hip hop. I came up with Russell Simmons was my manager, but even before that, we went to school together. We were like old schoolmates, and you know. We got into the hip hop thing kind of early, you know, as teens. You know, I actually was the first rapper to start his own label, and I was only like 19 at the time. That was way back in 79 when I started a label called Newtroit Records. I named the label Newtroit because I was actually going to school in Detroit area at the time and was kind of homesick for New York. So I just combined New York and Detroit and named the label Newtroit.
Oh.
Okay. So when you found the label, what tell people some of the songs that you came out with?
Well, for that particular time back in 79, I did a record called Big Apple Rapping. Again, I was homesick, so, you know, I was writing about some of the things that I saw and participated in growing up in New York, and so I titled that track Big Apple Rapping. You know, I was fortunate enough to meet Vaughn Mason from the group Vaughn Mason and Crew that was famous for the skating record, Bounce Rock, Skate Roll. He taught me a lot about production. You know, at the time, he was pretty busy. You know, they had a platinum single on their hand with Bounce Rock, Skate Roll, and they were working on the album. So, you know, at first he just was giving me pointers about production. And then eventually, when his schedule did slow down and time allowed, he actually went into the studio with me, and we recorded what might be my biggest hit, which was called Smurfy's Dance.
Yeah.
You know, about that little dance, about the little blue cartoon.
Trust me, as a fake terrible DJ that I was, you saved my house party a couple times.
Yeah, it was fun making that record. You know, although we did have some arguments in the studio about the lyrical content, you know, we had some creative differences about that record, but we ironed it out in the studio.
Hello. So what was the lyrical argument?
Well, I mean, you know, dances, especially growing up in New York, dances come and go so quickly. I really didn't want to rap about a dance. I had originally written lyrics that were, you know, they were about partying, but, you know, it was just party in general. And, in fact, the song was called Nothing But a Party. And, you know, Vaughn Mason, being more experienced and a veteran of the industry, he felt like, you know, I needed to rap about something that was hot and current right then and there. So, you know, we battled over that. Now, you know, I gave in and wrote some lyrics about the Smurf dance. And then even within that, if you remember the record, Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes, Smurf That Body Across the Floor. And, you know, again, that was Vaughn Mason's touch. He wanted that in there, and I just thought that was, I'm like, all right, man, look, I done already been damn wrote the lyrics about the damn Smurf. Now you want me to do some corny nursery rhyme inside of that. And so, you know, that started yet another argument. But you know what? As, you know, hindsight is 2020 now, because he was dead on at that. There was a very strong hook line, and it worked well. And people remember the record by that. So.
Oh, yeah. Coast to coast, baby. Coast to coast. And we were talking down south, Michelle.
I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, now, was that one of the reasons why you did the buckwheat rap, too?
Oh, no.
Nah, you know, the buckwheat rap was a product of me being sleepy and silly. You know, I was in the recording studio, like, all night. And, you know, that was around the time when Eddie Murphy had popularized his version of Buckwheat on Saturday Night Live.
Right. That and Gumby, goddamn it.
Yeah, you know, and I just thought that was so stupid at the time. I was like, yo, Eddie Murphy is a nut. So I was like, you know, I started talking like that after being in the studio all night. I started talking like, you know, the Eddie Murphy Buckwheat. And the engineer at the time, a cat named Julian Hertzfeld, he was like, yo, you should record that. You should record that. I'm like, what you mean? He said, you should rap like, you know, Buckwheat. I'm like, nah, man, you sleepy. You crazier than me. So, you know, he kept chiding me into doing it. So, you know, I finally said, all right, whatever. We already had a beat that was, you know, like next on the tape, you know, back in the days when we recorded on big 2-inch tapes.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I went in and, you know, I started fooling with it. And I was like, nah, man, I can't go through with this. He's like, nah, that's hot, go ahead. And, you know, I never liked the record, but, you know, Profile Records, which is the label I was signed to at the time, they loved the record. We actually even took some promos with me wearing a buckwheat wig. And I'm so glad that those pictures did not get circulated widely enough. You know, I'm sitting there going, okay. You know, it was a silly record. It was fun making it. But, you know, the surprise of it was a lot of people, you know, when I was performing, would actually request that I perform that song. And I refused to do it. You know, now I look back on it, so we shouldn't take ourselves so seriously. So I should have did it, you know, because people were requesting it. But, you know, the record was accidentally made, and I was surprised at the popularity of it.
Now,
so you remember that? Wow.
Hey, man, I'm old school. That's my era, so, you know, I was there to the fullest. You know, all anything that was coming out at that time, we was all over it.
Wow.
So, even if it was whack, I mean, you know, remember the Rapping Duke was big back then, too, for a minute, so.
You know what? I used to tour with him, you know, I had a new respect for him when I saw him do that live. I was like, yo, dude, you got a lot of heart to be able to go up there and rap like John Wayne.
Yeah.
You know, I had a whole new respect for him. You know, when you just brought up something, you know, may his soul rest in peace, Michael Jackson, the King of Pop. But we were on tour with, it was Rapping Duke, and you remember when Reedy had Centipede out.
Right.
And for some reason, they had her on tour. She was actually headlining this tour with, you know, with rappers. It was me, Sparky D, Run DMC. Let's see, who else was on this show? Rapping Duke and Nolan Thomas. And we did about 4 or 5 shows with Reedy, and she was, you know, she was just, she gave me a whole new respect for the Jackson family, because I always thought, you know, they were all a little quirky, a little weird, and she was just so down to earth and, you know, just a regular person. That, you know, I was kind of taken aback by that, because, of course, she's part of the famous Jackson family. So I just wanted to say that, rest in peace, Mike. We miss you.
Right. All right. So, now, I got to go on this right here. What was your beef with Kool Moe Dee? Why'd you do that? Why you bite me now? Or try to bite me now?
Well, it was something, you know, back in them days, man, hip-hop is like an extension or originally was came about with people trying to get their differences out without having to shoot or stab each other. You know, quick little history lesson. You already know, you know, Africa Bambaataa was a warlord, one of the largest gang chapters in New York, and, you know, it was him who kind of calmed and brought peace to the gang scene in New York. And, you know, what spun off of that was breakdancing and rapping. So, you know, that's uptown. That's like the Bronx and Manhattan. You know, cat like me, I'm from Queens. They call Queens the desert, you know, because everything was so spread out. And, you know, it just... it was a whole different scene in the Brooklyn, I mean, not Brooklyn, Bronx in Manhattan.
The Spider.
So,
Can you table that for a minute? I think we got
a
caller.
Hold on, I'm going to bring this caller in so I can ask you a question.
Caller, number one, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Caller,
hello?
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 Yeah, you're on the air. You have a question for Spidey D?
Hey, I just wanted to give a shout out. Hello?
Hello?
Can I give a shout out? Hello?
You give a shout out.
Hello?
Sure, give a shout out. Don't be shy.
No, I just wanted to say,
what's the shout out?
Number one, and I love your show.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. Okay, well, we can get back to our history lesson.
All right. Yeah, so to make that long story short, you know, the first time I did a show, or one of the first times, I should say, up in the Bronx, we were at a spot, and Kool Moe Dee and the rest of the Treacherous Three were there. So, you know, it was no secret that, you know, uptown rappers, you know, where all of this started, the Bronx with Kool Herc and, you know, all the original rappers, they wasn't too fond about some cats from Queens, you know, coming and horning in on their territory. So, you know, one night I was performing, and, you know, Mo D was backstage, and he was ice grilling me. You know, I mean, literally just standing there with his arms crossed, you know, walking me. Yo, seriously, with this, like, mean mug on his face. I'm like, yo, what's that all about? So that kind of started, you know, a little rivalry between he and I. And then I did a cut called How You Like Me Now, and, you know, played it. It played on the air, like, in the spring. And at the time, Profile Records was trying to put together a 12-inch cover, you know, because it was like, I still hadn't did an album yet, and they wanted, you know, just for people to start knowing my face, since I hadn't did an album or a video yet. So while they were taking their time putting together the picture cover, Mo D went and did his version of How You Like Me Now. Difference was, he was on a bigger label, Jive Records, and they did a video, and that was the title track for his video. So they, you know, they went all out on the promotion. And, you know, I was told through the grapevine that, yeah, you know, Mo D did that on purpose. You know, he don't like you, this, that, and the other. So, Tilo Rock, which was the brother of one of the Treacherous Three, actually told me that. So I figured that, you know, okay, that must be legit if he's telling me that. So he kind of riled me up. And then my friends started telling me, yo, you going to let him house your record like that? You know, people started agitating me.
Right.
And, you know, got to the point where I got so mad one day, I just came in, and I mean, literally in 2-3 minutes, I wrote the lyrics to it. That's how I came up with Try to Bite Me Now. You know, DJ Doc, who was famous for working with BDP and EPMD on some of their albums, he actually co-produced the track with me. And, you know, we did the whole thing from start to finish in, like, no time. As soon as I wrote the lyrics, I ran to the studio, I called Doc, and we came in, we cut the whole record, and then we went, he gave it to Mr. Magic and Marley Marl, and it was on the air. The whole process took, like, 2 days from start to being on the air, which, you know, don't happen no more nowadays. You gotta wait to get on the air, but, you know, it was just a way of getting something off my chest, and, you know, the little rivalry he had started when he mean mugged me.
Well,
when I first started, that's what kind of led to that.
Well, he was kind of mean mugging everybody back then. I think he was the I hate to say it, he was the progenitor of 50 Cent. I'm just gonna diss everybody and hope something sticks.
Well, you know what? I mean, on his part, it was a smart move, especially. Well, actually, I take that back, because when he started with LL, that was actually the career ender. I hate to say that, but, that, you know, LL, like, took it to a whole nother level when they had their little back and forth
right. Dish
record battle. But, you know, that's true hip-hop, man. I mean, you know, at least back then we used to do it without nobody dying.
Man.
I mean, you know, it's crazy now. It's like, you know, you can't even battle on wax anymore without somebody getting, you know, shot at, or,
right. You
know, it's unfortunate that it's that way now, but, you know.
Yeah, it's that I don't know if you've ever seen any of those beef videos where they show the rappers who have beef with each other, you know, they're fighting, knocking each other out in the club, or running the studio, making everybody strip. I'm like, what happened to that? You know, you diss somebody on record, and whoever wins, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's you know, like back in the days, I kind of helped orchestrate the whole Roxanne Wars thing, and you know, between Sparky D, Roxanne Shantae, the real Roxanne.
That was one of my questions.
I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna say, who do you think won? I mean, one, it was about 500 Roxanne's,
But who do you think was the best, and who won, in your opinion?
Well, they all had their own different aspects of what they were better at. You know, at the time, of course, I was emotionally attached because Sparky was my girl. So, of course, at the time, I thought she was better than all of them.
Uh-huh.
But what Sparky was better at was she had a clearer voice and had a better stage presence. Sparky used to command the stage on live performances. Run used to say, and you know, Run DMC at one point was like the hottest thing on the planet, and Run used to say,
oh,
and I hate coming on after Sparky, because you know, Sparky really had a crowd going. But Roxanne Shanté was way better at spontaneity and rapping off the top of her head than Sparky. Sparky was a great recording artist, and you know, could take written lyrics or write lyrics and record them in the studio and then have a commanding stage presence. The real Roxanne, the Puerto Rican real Roxanne, because there were a few of them.
Right.
The one that worked with Howie T.
Right.
She brought the sex appeal into it. You know, because she was very flashy on stage in her attire, and she was an underrated rapper too.
Well, she was real easy to look at.
Oh, no question.
She was real easy to look at.
So I mean, you know, they all brought their own specific things to the table, and then they kind of opened the door for like Salt and Pepper and, you know, Queen Latifah, and you know, they came busting through the door and started talking about more feminine subjects as opposed to battle raps. So I mean, you know, they all had their place in history. They all had their contribution. If I was pressed to say, you know, Sparky gonna kill me when she hears this, but I have to give Shanté the edge, you know, on an all around basis.
Yeah, I kind of love Shanté myself. I thought she actually had the same thing that you said happened to you with Kool Moe Dee with the How You Like Me Now. She kind of had that happen to her with her song that Rob Bass did. Right when she made her song, he did It's Take Two, but she had actually had that same song out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I can't remember. It wasn't named It Take Two, but it was the exact same beat in this. It was the same chorus line, everything.
Wow. You know what? I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's deep. I mean, you know, I know Rob, because Rob, you know, we used to be on the same label at Profile, but I wouldn't mess with Shanté. I mean, Shanté, you know, went down famously. She went uptown, you know, on their own turf, the home of hip-hop, and battled Busy B. You know, and in fact, I'm sure there's tapes of that circulating around, because that became a legendary little hip-hop battle. And she kind of embarrassed Busy B, who's one of the all-time greats. He may not have been that well-known as a recording artist, but, you know, in the streets of New York, he was, you know, a legend as far as battling. I heard Shanté put him to shame. Huh?
Oh, yeah, we knew about Busy B, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I heard she put him to shame.
Yeah, it was underrated, I think, that people didn't understand that a lot of people, you know, across the country, you know, we was in the South. I mean, everything that was hip-hop, we was grabbing and snatching that up and playing it. You know, that's all we did. You know, once Rapper's Delight came out, it was like, it was on. Whatever. If somebody was rapping about, you know, donkeys crossing the street, we was on it.
Yeah, that was a golden era for music. And I'd like to think that, you know, our little contributions to music kind of help bridge the gap between black and white, because nowadays, you know, you see black and whites partying together, you know, going to the stores to buy records, comparing artists. You know, I like to think that hip-hop has a lot to do with the fact that Barack Obama is in office. I think hip-hop made the nation a lot more tolerable, a lot more understandable of our culture.
Right.
you know, that's a beautiful thing. That's why, you know, I'll be trying to tell these young rappers now, it's like, you know, study your past. Don't, you know, don't just talk about what's going on around your neighborhood. Look back, you know, look at the Africa Bambaataa, the Ice-T's, you know, NWA, you know, look at their contribution to hip-hop. And, you know, it's like anything else. If you study your past, you'll know where you're going for the future.
Right. So what brought you out to L.A. to do K-Day?
Well, you know, actually, Greg Mack had started a label I think this was like late, it was like 89. He had started a label that was being distributed through Motown. And Sparky and I were not happy with our recording deals at the time. So I left Profile Records and she left Mia Records. And Greg Mack had offered us to join him on his label, you know, that was going to be distributed through Motown. So we moved out to L.A. I'm like, yo, we won't be on Motown. We might as well go live in L.A. And, you know, Greg had been, and K-Day as a station, had been very instrumental in our careers in playing our earlier songs. So it just seemed like a good move at the time. But, you know, unfortunately, MC Trouble had contracted a rare blood disease and passed away. And she was like the flagship of the label for Greg Mack that Motown was going to distribute. So I think after she passed, you know, that whole deal kind of just faded for whatever reason. Motown didn't go through with it. And, you know, but it was cool because I came out, you know, and met Curtis Harmon and, you know, started co-hosting his dance mix party with him at K-Day, you know, answering the phones live, which, you know, was a great experience for me. So I lived in L.A. from like 89 to 92. You know, I got to live the whole Boys in the Hood thing. You know, so it was cool. You know, when the movie came out, you know, it's like, yo, you seen the movie Boys in the Hood? I'm like, yo, dude, I live Boys in the Hood. What's up? You know, so L.A. was quite an experience for me. Love to visit the place. Don't think I'll ever live there again, but.
No. Yeah, I would never live there, but that's just me. I don't know how people can live there because you can't get nowhere.
Oh, it's rough, man. 405. Oh, man. Talk about sitting in traffic. I thought New York traffic was bad.
Yeah. Traffic is just.
It's rough.
Yeah. Now, what made you move into, like, engineering?
Well, you know, I was getting a little burnt out off the artist thing. You know, a lot of controversy with the labels, you know, chasing down royalty statements and whatnot. And, you know, I had been going at it for about, you know, I jumped in the hip-hop game in like 78. So about 88, about 1988 of just 10 straight years of recording, I was getting a little burnt out off the whole artist thing. And, you know, Patrick Adams, who's like a musical genius, you know, he did a bunch of disco era hits like Push Push in the Bush. oh, I'm sorry. Can I say Push Push
in the Bush? You can say whatever you want.
Push in the Bush.
Dance and Shake Your Tambourine. He had a number of, you know, like disco era hits, and he was kind of one of my mentors at Power Play Studios in Queens, New York, where I was, you know, I was a night manager there at one point. And so he told me, he said, yo, man, you know, just teach yourself how to engineer. You know, it's an invaluable art for you to learn. You can make your own record sound the way you want them to sound. You don't have to, you know, have an engineer interpret it. So I took him on that advice, and, you know, I just started teaching myself all of the different nuances of engineering. It's quite a fascinating science, and I would encourage any of the listeners out there. I mean, we all can't be 50 Cent, you know, or we all can't be Curtis Blow, the King of Rap. You know, sometimes there's other vocations in the entertainment industry, and I would strongly advise, you know, looking at engineering, because first of all, you know, top shelf engineers get paid like 50 to 100 an hour. So you imagine if you do a 10-hour block session, you know, you walking out the studio with anywhere from 500 to 1 grand in your pocket. So that was another motivation, you know, when I saw, you know, well back then it was like 25 an hour, which you know that's a decent motivation.
Yeah, it is. That's nice.
Oh yeah, yeah. Now, oh yeah, that's a decent piece of change.
Right. I see that you little mentor. You worked with Herbie. You worked with Teddy Riley. You know what was that like?
Well, you know, it's you know, again, looking back on it, I didn't realize at the time the history that was being made. You know, we did it because we loved it. But, you know, Power Play Studios in Queens became a magnet for, like, who's who in the recording industry. And, you know, Herbie Azor, you know, used to come by the studio and, you know, and just pick my brain because, you know, I had, by this time, I had more experience than he when he first started out producing Salt and Pepper. He used to come by my house. He used to come by the studio. And, you know, like I say, Vaughn Mason taught me a lot. And, you know, he didn't have to do that because I was a nobody kid off the streets of Queens when Vaughn Mason took me under his wing. So, you know, I had always said if I ever get into the position to be able to help some other people, that I would do so, like Vaughn Mason. So, you know, Dougie Fresh introduced me to Teddy Riley. And nobody knew who Teddy Riley was at the time. Teddy was only, I think, 18, and he was with a group called Kids at Work. They were on a label called Sound of New York, and their label executive, Gene Griffin, was indicted and had to go to jail. So it kind of left Teddy, you know, out in the lurch. Gene was kind of a father figure to Teddy. And so Teddy was kind of, you know, he was kind of lost for a minute. He was looking for some guidance and a way, you know, to get in the studio and continue his craft. I brought Teddy into Power Play, and, you know, I call myself co-producing with him. So, you know, we set up the tape, and, you know, I was going to engineer for him. Do you know, we set Teddy up in front of a keyboard. And he turned on that keyboard, and he said, I don't need no engineer. I can punch myself in. So I'm like, all right, cool. You know, I sat there in amazement and watched this kid. At the time, he was 18. He cut three of the most hellacious tracks I have ever heard in my life, in a matter of no time. I think it was less than 2 hours. And I'm sitting there mesmerized. I'm like, I don't need to co-produce this kid. This kid is a wizard. And I knew then that, you know, he was special, and eventually he proved how special. And I was even asked a question, you know, one time somebody asked me a question, who I thought was the top 5 producers in the game, and I had Teddy Riley listed at number 5 at the time. Teddy Riley had not yet did Keith Sweat's I Want Her or the track that he did on that album. He hadn't yet did Johnny Kemp's Just Got Paid,
yeah.
Friday Night. I mean, you know, he once he got on a roll, this kid, well, he did Dougie Fresh, the show, and people didn't know that because his name wasn't on the record. Right. But if you listen to the show, you can hear Teddy all over it because you know his sound and his style now.
You telling the world that Teddy Riley did Dougie Fresh's the show?
Yes, he did. If you listen to it, if you play that record, and then you play a record that you know that Teddy Riley did, you'll hear the nuances. Just like, yes, that's him. Because Teddy has a signature style in the way that he plays. Like, even the way the show starts off. Dun, 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 You know, if you recall, he called it the New Jack Swing.
Right.
Okay, listen to the show. That's New Jack Swing all day. They just didn't have a title for it back then. But yeah, unbeknownst to everybody, and maybe I'm spilling the beans on it, yeah, Teddy Riley played all the instruments on the show, you know.
Wow. Okay.
So I got a million stories.
I'm gonna turn. I know that you. I'm gonna ask you. You're a basketball fan. I know you bought an ABA team. And
oh, that's right.
Which you want to tell us about your basketball venture?
I mean, you know, basketball, man, was, you know, before rap. Basketball was like my sanctuary on the basketball court growing up on the streets of Queens. You know, kind of saved my life, kept me out of trouble. So I took that love for the game, you know, into my adulthood, and, you know, hip hop made me, you know, enough money to, be able to afford to buy into, a minor league basketball franchise, in the ABA. We first started in 2005 in Charlotte, and I named the team the Charlotte Crunk, which, you know, raised some eyebrows.
Right.
The ABA was an old red, white, and blue basketball league that Dr. J and George Iceman Gervin was spawned from. So, yeah, we actually have a team this year that's going to be playing in December in the ABA. We moved the team here to Atlanta now, and we named the team the Spiders. I didn't name the team. I'm not that vain. But when I'm talking to them, one of my partners, we should name the team the Spiders. I know everybody's going to think, hey, this guy's like really egotistical. He named the team after himself. But, you know, we were fortunate enough to be able to sign the world-famous Hot Sauce, you know, from the N1 fame.
Right.
You know, Hot Sauce has got all those crazy, sick moves. In fact, you know, most of the team is going to be a lot of former N1 players. So, you know, we're really anticipating a highly exciting season. I don't know how much we'll win, but we'll be very entertaining on the court.
Now I was gonna ask you that because I'm not a big proponent of N1 basketball. I'm a basketball dude, you know, to my bone marrow. What happened to New York basketball, man?
They still turning out prospects, but. You know, New York is famous for their point guards, you know, from, you know, Kenny Anderson, Stephon Marbury. But I don't know, for some reason. I mean, well, look, we still got Lamar Odom, you know, that's New York, that's Queens.
Right.
That's Queens, New York, you know. Ron Artest, that's Queens, New York. I mean, we still got some ball players that's representing. But, you know, they just not on the New York Knicks no more, man. I don't understand what's going on over there. But
it's not about the Knicks. I'm saying that there hasn't been a good ball player that's come out of New York in a while.
Yeah, you know, I think what it is, man, is, you know, a lot of the kids that are really talented just don't want to go to class, man, you know. It's like, yo, dudes, you got to go to class to play on the team. I mean, you know, back in the day, they used to fix grades. I know that went on. Well, you know, a cat that was...
Right now.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but I used to see cats that was dumb as a rock, you know, getting 80s in biology. Come on, man. You know what I'm saying? You don't even know how to boil an egg. You get an 80 in biology. But, yeah, you're right, man. There's been a little drought, you know. But like I say, I mean, we're still proud. We got Lamar Odom on the NBA champs, and now, you know, Ron Artest and went to the NBA champs. So, you know, we got representation from New York. It's just, you know, they're a little older now. That's all.
Yeah. They're a whole lot older. Well, now, I know you still got your new Troy record label, right?
Yeah, we've actually just, I decided, you know, at my advanced stage of my career that I wanted to do one more album and that I wanted to revive New Troy since, you know, and it took a while for me to realize that I was the first rapper to start his own label. And it was like, you know, when it hit me, I was like, wow. So, you know, I just thought it was, you know, first of all, I've got a number of talented cats that are in Detroit. One of them being the grandson of the late, great David Ruffin, former lead of the Temptations. His grandson is a great rapper living in the Detroit area. Another gentleman by the name of Donut, a.k.a. Bobby Seals, from out of that area. So because there was rising talent still in Detroit and because Eminem really put Detroit on the map, I thought it would be a good idea to resurrect the New Troy imprint and, you know, hopefully be successful so that I could leave something for my kids to run once I'm gone. You know, I want to make New Troy, you know, sort of like Into a Giant the way Berry Gordy did with Motown. You know, it starts off as a mom-pop operation and grows, you know, where you grow, you home grow your talent and cultivate, you know, and that's something that I've studied, the Berry Gordy model of building a label where he had, you know, everything was in-house, the artists, the backgrounds, the writers, all of that was in-house, and it was like a little factory, and he tailored that off of the assembly line at Ford Motor Company, which he worked. So I want to follow back in that rich tradition, especially, you know, this is the 50th anniversary of Motown, so I wanted to kind of coincide the 50th anniversary of Motown with the resurrection, because this is the 30th anniversary of New Troy. So I'm, you know, I'm restarting the label, we just put out our new single called Who You Follow, my Twitter baby, you know, based off this social phenomenon, which is Twitter. You know, it just amazed me that, you know, I could actually flirt and not talk to a chick and not see her. I'm like, yo, this is new.
That's a whole internet experience right there.
I mean, you know, I could lie and don't have to keep a straight face. You know what I'm saying?
Where can they find that single?
Well, right now, that single you can find on iTunes. Just put in a search. Well, I can't say put in a search for Spider D because a whole bunch of songs will pop up. Put in a search for Who You Follow on iTunes, and then it'll pop up the New Troy Records logo. Spider D, Who You Follow, my Twitter baby is the subtitle. And you can look for the video on YouTube. Just you can type in SPYDERD, and it'll pop up on your YouTube search.
All right, sir. Yeah, cool. Well, thank you for blessing us on Smooth Drama.
Open invitation.
Yes.
To definitely come back.
Yeah,
okay, is it all right if I put a link from your show from our NewTroyRecords.com website?
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, because I want to talk to you about these battles.
Uh-oh.
You need to get them battles together.
Uh-oh.
That's what I
want to
hear.
Uh-oh.
Hey, well, man, you know, whenever you ready.
I'm ready.
We can do that.
Always ready.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me.
No,
thank you.
We appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and be with us.
Yeah. All right, y'all be blessed.
Plus, you told the world that Teddy Riley did the show. Nobody knew that.
But now we all know.
Now we all know.
So thank you for that.
Thank you. All right, y'all take care.
Thank you.
Peace.
Thanks. And everyone, that was Spider D, and you can find his new single on iTunes, and it was called Who You Follow. And you know, definitely check that out. Never knew half the stuff that he was talking about. Now I know.
Yeah.
Now I know. Definitely want to keep. You know, the spiders, the team spider.
Be looking for the spiders.
Exactly.
Y'all better win.
So on Thursday night, we will have another guest. What's his name?
Black Mikey
from San Diego will be on the show on Thursday night, 9 o'clock, same place, same time. So we wish everyone good night, and we'll see you all on Thursday night.
Peace.
Night.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you guys.
Smooth. Drama.